the good ball played in to Tony Morley. Oh, he missed it!
Hello, Aston Villa fans, and welcome to the Villa Threader podcast. I am your host, Chad Williams. Please subscribe and make sure to smash the like button on this video. And you can follow me on all socials. On today's episode, I'm joined by my special guest, Dan Bardell, who is the host of the 1874 podcast and my Monday show regular, Aaron Thornton, who is the host of the Football Brief. This is the AVSC Weekly Recap, your weekly dose of Aston Villa news and headlines. Yesterday in the Premier League, he finished Aston Villa 2, Burnley 1. Aston Villa are in a better place. A magnificent Daniel Marlin at the double. It is Aston Villa's fourth win in all competitions. Momentum is building. And Unai Emery in Aston Villa, before the international break, are in good shape and are in good stead. Pleased to have you both for the show tonight. How are we?
I'm good, mate. Really good. All the better for the last kind of couple of weeks when Villa have started winning games and scoring goals again. I'm good.
Likewise, mate. Yeah, mate, I'm good. Thank you. Same. It's been it makes the weekend and the week ahead a lot more durable, doesn't it, when Villa win? And yeah, happier. How are you, mate?
Yeah, we're certainly getting more to ourselves, I think. We're in a lot better place than we were a few weeks ago. So I couldn't be more happy at the moment. I think we need to do it now, though. We need to continue it.
Yeah.
So, Dan, what is your verdict on the Burnley game?
Really good, mate. I walked away from Villa Park yesterday feeling really happy, feeling like we've clicked, I think. I think there's still a couple of players that need to get back to their absolute best level. But I thought overall yesterday we looked more like an Unai Emery team than we have done at other points this season. I think game by game, the last four, we've kind of got a little bit better. It's gone up in stages. And I really enjoyed the setup that we went with yesterday. I think we probably took Burnley a little bit by surprise with the way we played. Certainly took me by surprise as well. I thought Daniel Marlon might play, but obviously expected him to play wide right like he has done previously for Villa. But to see him in that central role playing close to Watkins, I thought he was absolutely sensational. Took his goals really, really well. And it just took me back to a couple of seasons ago when we finished in the top four. Like, he was kind of playing a DRB role, wasn't he? Playing off Watkins, just having that pace in transition, and Bogard and Kamara gave everyone a platform. I thought they protected the defence really, really well. Burnley didn't do much from open play. And then also they gave a platform for those that were playing ahead of them, because it was quite an attacking kind of front four, front five, wasn't it, in the end. So I think it was great team selection, great tactics, good performance. Shame we conceded off that set piece, but got the job done. Four wins out of four, you can't complain.
That's a good momentum. It's really important. Look as well, the Villa Park games are taking advantage of the home games. Because I think since Emery took over, the home record's been always pretty decent, really.
Yeah, I think look, there was obviously the stumble against Crystal Palace, but that's one defeat in 13, 14 months, isn't it? Like, the record they've had at Villa Park has been incredible. Emery, there was a phase where he was breaking records every week. Obviously, he's been there a while now, so those records are always going to slow down. But I think I saw yesterday that he's the fastest manager to 80 Premier League wins, was it? 80 out of 150 games. Oh, it's some record, isn't it, what he's done for this club. And I still go to Villa Park, even like the Fulham game, I went there expecting to win. When we're at home, we've shown that we can beat pretty much anybody. There's been the odd off day here and there over the years, but generally Villa at home, people don't relish coming to play there. And I actually thought the atmosphere was really good yesterday as well. I thought that the crowd was really good yesterday, probably the best it's been all season. So things are looking up. I still don't think we're all the way there, and they'll probably be difficult to come again this season, because I don't think we're as strong maybe as we've been in previous years. But you're right, Chad, that momentum's massive. And last international break, I think we all wanted it. We were quite glad of it. This time we want it, which is a good thing.
I need a vital three points, because after the international break, we'll come to it later, but we've got something coming up. The looks obviously Tottenham, you know, Man City, Liverpool, so that's why the result yesterday was even more important.
Yeah, I think...
Your thoughts?
Oh, sorry, did you want that for me or for Aaron, sorry?
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think of that, Aaron?
All right, cool.
About the fixtures.
About the fixtures. Yeah, I mean, I have to echo what Dan said, really. I think, fixtures aside, we didn't really want the break to come, because I think we've been on such good form in the last four games. And I agree with what Dan was saying. It's every game we've like slowly been sort of up in the gears a bit. And I think yesterday was almost a complete performance, not quite a complete performance, but I think we're on the way. And it was good to see, you know, the ball move from back to front quite nicely. I think if you look, like Luka Dean was involved, I think, in the start of the phase of like both of the goals, and it was sort of working its way through. And that's something we haven't seen for a while. I think there's been a bit of a disconnect between the team, between the players.
I think there's little steps, little baby steps moving forward to get to where we are again, I think.
Yeah, totally. And look, the fixtures coming up are going to be tough, but I think, you know, we're on our way now. And I think, you know, the wins breed confidence, don't they? So the players are going to be a lot more confident. Having someone like Marlon, who's firing and is happy, is only going to bode as well. And hopefully give Ollie a bit of help as well. And, you know, there's not as much pressure on him now to get all the goals. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the fixtures, to be honest, Chad. You know, I don't ever... You know, I like to think we go into most games looking to win. And in isolation, you look at the start of the season. I know we've had it's been a bit of a, you know, a crisis. But I think Everton away and Brentford away, and those two draws, in isolation, those two draws are actually good points, you know.
The thing is, all teams, they all go through bad blips. It happens.
Yeah. I'd rather sort of get ours out of the way if this is to be our blip. Then, you know, we just sort of push on now. But like Dan said as well, I think... The only thing with us is the squad at the minute. And in terms of, like, if we get a couple of injuries, are we okay? I think Pau Torres coming in for Mings has been a bit of a... I'm a massive Mings fan, so, you know, I love Mings playing, but a bit of a blessing. I think Pau Torres has sort of rediscovered his form a bit that he lost last season after the injury. So I think that's made a bit of a difference for us. So, I think, you know, bring on the fixtures, Chad, is what I say.
Yeah. And also, I mean, Donny Amana, we have to talk about him from yesterday. He was absolutely magnificent. And even the game before against Feyenoord, you can sort of see what he can do. But I just thought the way he's full of energy, he's absolutely rapid. That's what I'm talking about. Like making those sort of those runs, he times them perfectly.
Yeah, he's a top player, isn't he, Marlon?
We signed him from Dortmund. Well, so he shows quality of player that he is.
Yeah, he's not really had a fair crack of the whip, I wouldn't say, since he's arrived. But he's one of those players that every time I've seen him play, he's done something. And I've thought, oh, he's a good player. And I think we've missed having that directness and that pace. He's kind of not going to beat you with any... big amount of skill. He beats you with pace and power. He kind of gets his head down and he runs, and that's where his first goal comes from. But I think even he went through that phase of scoring last season. I think he scored three games in a row. But even all the other times he was on the pitch or he came on, he'd always make something happen. He'd put a shot just wide, or the keeper would make a save one-on-one. I think he came on in the Chelsea game and we won that one 2-1, and Asensio took the plaudits. But I actually thought the 10 minutes Marlon was on the pitch, he really, really helped swing that game in Villa's favour. And you know, fair play to him, because you don't ever hear of him complaining, or when he's on international duty, quite often players will talk to the press. He hasn't done that. And I don't think he's been given a fair chance. He's been in and out. I don't think he'll have played 90 yeah. minutes for Villa yet. I don't think he's completed a game.
He hasn't really had okay rank of the running the team yet.
Yeah, he should get that now, shouldn't he? But the thing is with Emery, he was kind of back to having a plan for each game yesterday, because I think we all probably expected Emi Buendia to play.
Yeah.
He'd scored two games in a row. I was shocked when he wasn't named in the team, but Emery obviously had a particular plan for that game yesterday, and I hope to see more of that going forward, because fundamentally we do always kind of play the same system, but it did feel over the last few seasons that there was these subtle changes game to game. It felt like we'd gone back to that a little bit yesterday, and he picked Marlon for a very specific job because Burnley play with a back three, because they were going to sit in a low block to get close to Watkins, and they knew that the right centre-back of Burnley would jump out and take Rodgers. And then it ended up, I did a pod with Jacob earlier, and he's done an article in The Athletic, and he said that he left them to 2-on-2, and it was a really clever tactical plan. I think Marlon's got potential to be a really good player for us and a really good signing, because I don't think we're a team that's full of goals if you take Watkins and Rodgers out. Obviously, McGinn's been on a good run in front of goal, but if Marlon plays, he'll get you double figures. He's a good goal scorer.
Because in Daniel Marlon, he's proved the reason why we spent that money on it, why we signed him. He's definitely proved that.
Yeah, I think as well, like Dan was saying, the resilience he's shown, because if you don't forget, like he wasn't part of the Champions League squad when he first came, and that was a big thing for him joining. And, you know, for a player mentally to sort of get over that and just come to terms with that, and then just put your head down and carry on, and then only have sort of limited chances. I'm a really big fan, and I think he's sort of found his position now, which hopefully, you know, being like Dan was saying, that Diaby role, we've not had anything since then. And I know Diaby, I don't think Diaby was a flop. I know people have said that. I quite like Diaby in that system. I thought he was good. I thought he was a different sort of threat. And if that's Marlon can sort of fulfill that and do his own thing.
Very similar, actually, I think. To Moussa Diaby, the way he plays, and he's a very confident finisher.
Yeah, that second finish was insane. He just put his laces through that, didn't he? But I think it's good, because he gives defenders something else to think about. Like he's always on the move. He's always moving around. So like that's a nightmare, isn't it, for most defenders? So I think just having that option. I don't know. This is a bit of a weird one, but he gives me a bit of a 90s throwback. A bit of a Julian Joachim, the way.
Mate, you know what? I thought that. Yeah, that's exactly what I thought yesterday when he scored that second goal.
Yeah, I used to love Julian Joachim. He was so random, you know. He used to pop up, but that sort of figure that like he's sort of, you know, the shoulders up and the way he just runs. I'm like, he reminds me of him. A bit of an old comment there. Sorry.
No, I loved it. That's exactly what I thought yesterday, but I didn't say it on my podcast because I thought people might not remember him. So hey, I didn't say it.
Let's get that going, mate. Julian Joachim, let's do it.
One of the ways we've done your mother. You think so? Link up play with Rodgers and Watkins, and even Matty Cash, it allowed him more spikes going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just goes, doesn't he? He's just always on the move. He's always making runs. I don't think he's going to be a player that like holds the ball up like Ollie, although I thought in the European game he played up front, I thought he did okay at doing that. And, you know, Ollie wasn't brilliant at that when Emery came in. He's developed at doing that since Emery took the job. But he's just always on the move. So when you've got someone who's quick, who's always going to run in behind, it does open up for players that are playing in similar channels. So I thought you saw Cash more involved. Rodgers was more involved. I thought McGinn was decent, playing just kind of just behind him as well. I just liked the system yesterday, because on the face of it, you're watching Kamara and Bogard, and when you read that team out at the start, you're thinking, that's a bit defensive against Burnley, two kind of defensive midfielders. But Bogard almost took Kamara's role, and Kamara was allowed to go a little bit more forward. And it reminded me a little bit of Kamara and Luiz from a couple of seasons ago. That was was the most I've thought Villa looked like the team from that season.
Probably since that season.
Because they just had the components just all seemed to fit everyone's job. Everyone that was in the team seemed to be able to do the things that they were good at. Even just Cash being allowed to come forward because Bogard was dropping into a back three. It just meant that every player on the pitch yesterday got to play to their strengths and got to play their position the way they would want to play. And I think that's why we played so well.
Mate, Bogard. He looked good passing through the lines, and just
very good.
Pass completion was just insane. But yeah, Very good.
Because also in the wind areas, we're improving even more because we've been crying out for more whip for the last few games. You can see the real difference. Because even for Luka Dinja, he got some perfect deliveries in the box, which is something we need to see more often. And his crosses are perfect.
Mm.
And even his corners as well, like every single corner was fantastic delivery.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Luka Dean does very well, isn't it? His cross, and I think in the first few games we weren't able to get forward, so we weren't seeing that, and you know it was becoming really frustrating. So yeah,
usually play like sort of very narrow.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just Emery's way, isn't it? I think, you know, any width is usually from the fullbacks, but in recent weeks, the fullbacks have sort of been nullified, so there's just been nothing, and you've been having midfielders dragging out, trying to occupy that space instead, and it sort of messed us up a bit. But no, yesterday was a lot more promising in terms of, you know, the formation and the tactics, and like Dan was saying, just players actually playing in the positions that suit them and playing to their strengths. I think... yeah, hopefully, you know, we carry on. Yeah. It was also good to see a couple of players back, like Onana and Barkley, sort of just making a bit of an appearance. You know, so there's a bit of depth there coming, which is good for the big run-in.
I'm happy that Luka Dinja stay, because there's a bit of uncertainty about his future. He's got the transfer window over the last few seasons. But he's a solid squad player to have. I mean, Dinja is very experienced.
Yeah, Mattsson was bought for a lot of money, but I think if you asked Unai Emery who his number one left back is, I think he would say, look, Luka Dean, he just sees everyone off that kind of comes in that position. I like that we've got both of them and that they're both different. I thought Mattsson might play yesterday, just try and get a bit more of pace into the team. And I would like to see him get a run, because I think similar to Bogard and Marlon, I think if he gets a run in the team, you'll see him better. You'll see a better version of him. But Luka Dean, it's hard to take him out because he is just so consistent and he is so reliable. And he probably gives you that bit more defensively. And when Villa are playing well and ticking, he's always a big part of that with his deliveries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Bogard as well. I think he's very underrated. I think what he does goes unnoticed, I think. Mm. Look, his composure in possession. And he sort of keeps the team ticking over. Look, he doesn't, you know, he sticks to the basics, keeps it simple, but that's what I like about him. It's reliable.
And he's had to, you know, bide his time a bit. And I think, you know, Emery's very good at sort of bleeding players in slowly, isn't he? He sort of, and he's only 21. So I think his confidence has also had to grow along with the game time. And sometimes sitting on the side is almost is like homework for players. I think when Tielemans first came and, you know, you look at Elliot now, arguably, I think Emery probably wants him to sit and watch and just see how the players are playing in that position. I think Bogard is a bit of a product of that. And yeah, I saw him in pre-season in Nashville. He looked good then as well. But you never know with pre-season if he's going to play in that position in the league. And stuff.
Bogard as well, he never seems to give the ball away. Look, he always makes a decent pass.
Yeah, his stats, his numbers were through the roof, weren't they? I think he completed 100% pass rate in one of the games recently I saw, and I think he was at around 96-97% yesterday. I think what I liked yesterday, I would say that, you know, previously maybe he's got those numbers because he has been a little bit safe, which is understandable because he's feeling his way into the team. Whenever he's played for Villa, he's obviously often popped up in different positions as emergencies. I think yesterday, you know, look at the players that were on the bench and that didn't play. He was in that team on merit, and I think maybe that helped him. I think maybe that meant a lot to him, and he was prepared to drive forward with the ball a little bit more. I think he was part of the goal Buendia scored last week against Fulham as well, where he got his foot in and won it back. That stuff's not a problem to him, but I think just seeing him growing confidence, I think he's going to become a really valuable member of the team. Sometimes being able to play in different positions works against you, but Emery likes his squad to be so flexible. Look at McGinn. There's always a place somewhere for him in the team because he can play in so many different places. I think Bogard's good enough to make himself a big part of this squad. I guess the problem for him is that when Tielemans is back, it's going to be Tielemans and Kamara. And I don't think you can have too many complaints about that. But arguably the way he played yesterday, you could argue he should be ahead of Onana at the moment.
He always puts in.
I'd agree.
A good shift. He's a solid player.
Yeah, really, really good player. When Villa bought him, they had high hopes for him, and he's done okay on some of his loan spells. I thought when he signed his new contract, you know, maybe Villa were protecting themselves a little bit. They might get a fee for him. Obviously, we know homegrown players are a valuable commodity in this day and age with PSR and SCR. But I'm glad he stayed, and I think he deserves a lot of credit because I think he's never, ever let anyone down. He's played in all those different positions, like I said earlier. But I think the players seem to like him as well. I think you could see some of the players felt like he was a big deal in that team yesterday. What he did, he was certainly in our top three, top four players. So well done to him.
Good. I think with Kamara and Bogard is actually a good combination. Honestly, I think Kamara as well. That's been a massive difference for us. You saw that, obviously, the first goal. But Kamara picked out a wonderful pass. Because you can also, you know, Tielemans does that. But also, Kamara can do that as well.
Yeah, that pass was sensational. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things we did this summer was to tie him down to a new contract, because I think obviously if he had left, it would have been like, that would have been a really big, big void to fill. And I think having Kamara there next to you, if you're a Bogard or a Tielemans or anybody, it makes a big difference, doesn't it? But like Dan was saying, I think, you know, even if Tielemans comes back in, having an option like Bogard on the bench, just having that squad player, like, makes a massive difference for us.
It adds to the squad depth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
I mean, Kamara as well, like, the interception, the way he wins the ball back, he's always charging for the ball. But he's always very calm, I think. He sort of gets stuck in. He does a dirty work.
Yeah, I think it flipped yesterday. I think Bogard was the one who maybe did the dirty work, and Kamara was allowed to come forward.
It switched.
He's a good footballer, I think, because he is our, I mean, much more than this, but he is our defensive midfielder. He's our anchor man, the man who protects the defence, Kamara. So maybe he doesn't get to go forward as much as he'd like, but the ability's there. He's still, the fact we got him on a free just blows my mind every single day. And I thought he might be someone that we lost in the summer with all the rules, PSR not qualifying for the Champions League. And I think maybe at one point that was something that might have happened. But the club deserves huge credit for, you know, not only getting him on a free, but then managing to tie him down again on a big contract. I think generally in football, he goes under the radar. I don't think other teams know what we've got. So long may that continue, because I don't want them to know.
Yeah. No. It's not saying anything.
And something I'll touch on as well. Is Gassan. And I think each guy is getting better and better. He's sort of improving. You want to get off the bench. He's a real good input. A little bit similar actually to Leon Bailey. Sort of like what he was like at his best, or like, you know, was it input?
Yeah, I mean, Gaston was a big unknown for me. Obviously, I listened to different, you know, pods and stuff, and was trying to get a bit of intel on him when he first arrived. But again, sort of like the team, really, game by game, the more I'm seeing him, the more I'm sort of getting why Emery signed him. I think I can see the type of player that he is. Was it Feyenoord? I thought his best game, I think it was Feyenoord he played, was the best game I saw. I thought he just missed a goal, really. But I thought him getting forward and back and sort of being that, just being that threat in and around was valuable. And again, it gives us a different option. You know, if like Marlon's not around, or, you know, Watkins, he's able to play along that front line.
You saw a different Nice, didn't we?
Yeah, I think a bit like Marlon, I think he just needs a bit of time to grow and adapt. But Emery seems to like him because he's played more minutes than I thought he maybe would have actually already. So, yeah, I like, from what I've seen, I like him, but I expect a lot more to come, and you know, hopefully that'll happen after the break. But he seems okay.
He looks like a well-built athlete. Because even his, you know, he's got a lot of pace. It's amazing because he's quite tall.
Yeah, and he likes that profile of player, doesn't he? We've seen that with Rodgers, quite unique. You don't often get someone that plays in those positions, be the frame that Rodgers and Gaston are. I've not seen anything yet that's made me jump up and think, wow. But then I think it is such early days for him. Like Aaron just said, I think he's played more than I thought he would play. I just think that we know that we're seeing with Elliot now that Emery, players that play in the number 10 position or the kind of positions off the striker, he's slower to introduce them into what's happening. Now, Elliot, Sancho, they've played in the league before. Gasson's kind of got it double time, hasn't he?
He's going to get to know them,
So it works twofold for him, whereas for Elliot and Sancho, they've just got to learn what Emery wants. Gaston's almost got double the workload because he's got to learn what Emery wants and he's got to get used to the league at the same time. But he had I looked into him a lot when we signed him. I knew little bits about him before we got there, but was by no means an expert on him. But he had a good season last time out. I think he got 20 goal contributions all in. Yeah. I can't remember which way around it was. It was either 12 goals and 10 assists.
In the Europa League.
Yeah.
He's played in the Europa League before as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And he works hard. I'll give him that. That's one thing I have seen. He'll help the fullback out and work hard, which isn't something that wide players are always brilliant at.
To go on to the next question then. So we can talk about the goalkeeper situation. So obviously Bizzard has been playing really well. So do you think could Bizzard plus push for a regular start as a number one?
Who do you want answering, mate?
Yeah, Dan, you can answer it.
Look, it's great to have a reliable number two goalkeeper, someone that can come in the last second like they did on Thursday and just not be ruffled by that and actually perform to the level he performed at. I think he's brilliant. And I think he's got a lot of really good attributes. When we signed him, I spoke to Kevin Hatchard, who's a European football expert, and he said to me, that is a luxurious option as a number two goalkeeper. You know, that's a player that's played in the Champions League last season. He's an international. He's been around the block. Obviously, he's got a lot of experience. Probably hits like a 7 out of 10 for everything you'd want as a goalkeeper. A little bit like when Jed Steer was backup goalkeeper, I always thought he probably didn't have one outstanding attribute, but he was a 7 out of 10 at most things. And you just want your number two to be reliable first and foremost, I think. Yep. That's what Olsen, unfortunately for me, he just wasn't. He did make the defence nervy. Generally, we'd concede goals when he was on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's the opposite now. You can see the defence completely trust
him. You sort of don't, as a third, you don't panic.
No, which is a nice feeling after a couple of years of panicking whenever Martinez wasn't playing. Martinez is the number one, and you know if he's fit, he's going to play. I think Bizzard's someone who is a good person to have around the place that will actually push Emi, though, because Emi knows if he's not there, there is actually now someone there that can fill his gloves and perform to a high level. And at the moment with Emi, he's almost got ground to make up back with the fans again because the fans have taken to Bizzard. Obviously, Emi did
that. I think he left a bad taste, a lot of fans' mouths.
I've got a little bit of sympathy for him.
I wasn't that... Yeah. Dan will know more than me. Sorry to jump in, Dan. With the situation, looking from the outside in, if you're sort of told that you can go, and then him and his team have looked around and, and obviously there was contact made in Man United back in January or whatever, that bit was a bit, but I think players do that. We're not aware of that. There's probably talks always ongoing between players and clubs. So I wasn't that bothered, if I'm being honest. I wasn't as up in arms as fans were. Could you have gone about it better? Maybe, but we don't know. We're not privy to conversations. And the main thing for me was that when he came back after everything, that he just, put the top on and did what he does best.
The big thing for me is...
I think he has.
Nobody's bigger than the club.
For sure.
No, just but I do think he's genuinely the only world-class player that we have. We've got players that are close or that could hit that level, but with what he's achieved in the game, I do think he is our genuinely one. Yeah. World-class player. Like Aaron said, he could have handled it better in the summer, but I do have an element of sympathy for him. But that first game back, you saw Everton, he got us a point that day. I think if he's not playing, we'd probably lose that game. And that's all you can ask. I think the problem was all this stuff happened at a time when we were struggling. We weren't looking good on the pitch. Obviously, off the pitch, things weren't going brilliantly at the time either. So it was kind of like the imperfect storm, everything coming together at the same time. But you could argue that, you know, since Martinez has come back, that's when the results have picked up. You know, I think he'd be disappointed with the goal he let in yesterday for sure. But overall, I think, you know, he's been in good form since he's come back. I've been happy with what I've seen, and he's kind of readjusted. I don't think it'll ever be the same. Like, the fans aren't singing the same kind of songs about him. The Tannoy announcer isn't announcing his name in the same way, which I know was something that Emmy was the guy who introduced that to the club. He asked the club to start doing those things about the players before the game. So that stopped. But, you know, at the end of the season, if he's played a big part in us doing something special, like winning the Europa League or moving up the league and qualifying for the Champions League again, people will forget the summer and just concentrate on what a good goalkeeper
is. I think it's a good thing when he's got competition, because, I mean, Martinez, he might step up his game. Nobody knows he's got Grizzot.
Yeah, for sure. And like you know, the points that you and Dan have made, Bizard's very good. And it's so refreshing, you know, that game, the final game where he came in last minute, I was not even bothered. I was like, okay, that's fine. Whereas, you know, 12 months ago, I'd have been like, oh gosh, this is going to be a rough ride now. So yeah, it's good. It's good for him. But I think, you know, it's not going to be the same. But I think what I like is he's just being professional about it. He's not the same on his socials anymore. He's a bit more subdued, but I think he's being professional, you know. And that's one thing. He could have really, if he wanted to push remove that much, he could have handed it a request in if he wanted to. I think he could have got really messy. I don't see it as this big mess really that it was sort of portrayed to be in the summertime, especially for that Palace game. I don't think it was the end of the world, but
Martinez, he's just not more. I think the showboating, I think. Class keeper, but I don't think he overdoes it sometimes in the show about it.
That's him though, isn't it? That's his personality. And I think it's like I'm not complaining, but like a Ronaldo or someone who's got a bit about them, who can back it up with the performance.
Big personality, that's it. Big personality.
Yeah, and you need those players. And we're lucky to, you know, he was lucky to have us at the time when we signed him. And obviously he's gone on and done amazing things. So we've done as much for him as he's done for us. But I think, you know, now, like Dan said, he's genuinely our only world-class player.
Well, do you think Martinez is it going to turn around the dressing room? Because then it gives the other players a lift. Obviously, he won the World Cup. He played the Champions League in the last season. He's been there and done it.
Yeah, I think it was a problem in the dressing room at times when everyone came back for pre-season. Like, everyone knows he wanted to go to Manchester United, and you know, you read between the lines of a few things that Ming said, and obviously things weren't great in the dressing room at that point, but I'm sure they've all been spoken about. We don't know everything that happens at the football club. We don't know every conversation that takes place. I'm sure any kind of grievance that anyone had with him or any kind of grievance that he had with anyone, I'm sure it's all been aired out, and that's reflected on the pitch now. Like I say, it'll never be the same. Like, it's weird when McGinn goes off, he doesn't get the captain's armband. But
yeah,
I guess that's part of the decision making process that came with what happened at the summer. It's like a risk he took by agitating for the move the way he did. And it happens. We've seen it happen before with other players. Gareth Barry agitated for a move, got stripped of the captaincy. Then later on in the season, when Larsson got injured, he got it back. Like, these things happen. But the most important thing is that I still think, as competent as Bizot is, and he is more than competent, Villa are still better when Emi Martinez is on that pitch. And the day he goes, the club will be weaker for it.
Agreed.
Don't you think that actually we have to give credit to Dean Smith for something here?
Yeah.
Because he was a Dean Smith signing.
Like most of our squad.
Yeah.
But going back to that final game, I mean, Bizot, I really enjoyed some of these saves. And I think it's not the second choice. He's got a very calm presence. And you know, the way he commands his area really well. He's got good distribution, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think the club have used metrics quite a lot for this signing in the summer. I think they looked at, with the analysts would have looked at, what is it that Emi Martinez does well? Can we find a goalkeeper that that ranks high in those metrics for the things that Emi does well, like being authoritative in the box, sweeping up, coming and claiming crosses, holding saves. I think they've looked at the kind of things that Emi's good at and tried to get a gettable version of that as their number two. And Bizzard apparently was the one that came up really high in all the metrics and all the stats for those things, and that's what they've gone with. And to get someone for under £2 million, even at 34,
they've done their research.
It's a great signing. I mean, I don't think we lean too heavily on analytics with our signings. I think it's kind of what Unai wants, Unai gets. But that was a club-driven signing that ultimately got signed off by Emery. And so far, you know, you can't argue with that bit of business. I know he's only a number two goalkeeper, but actually Martinez misses games, so it's an important thing to have.
Yeah.
Just look at Martinez. I bet he wants a clean sheet, Martinez.
Well, he probably should have concentrated more on the corner coming in yesterday rather than wrestling if he wanted that clean sheet.
We're going to talk about corners. I'm going to ask you, Aaron, so how do Aston Villa get better defending set pieces and corners?
I think it's concentration, isn't it, if anything? I thought, you know, usually, I mean, I know last season we were conceding goals quite a lot, but I thought, other than that sort of season, or that patch in the season, I thought defensively we've always been fairly solid, you know, with, you know, going back with Cons and Mings and then sort of obviously Pau Torres coming in and whatnot. I think it's just concentration levels, Chad, to be honest. I don't know too much any of the ways how they can really do it better, because I think yesterday...
Towards the end of the game... We always seem to lose our concentration. Slight stages of the game, I think.
We saw Konza going mad, because I think if you look, he's sort of battling with one of the players, and then they sort of double up on him. And this guy sort of ran. I forgot who he was now. The goal scorer. He sort of ran across him, and I don't know whose man that was, but Konza wasn't happy about it. So I think whoever had him sort of let him go. And then obviously Martinez was doing his own thing and missed it. But I think it's just levels. Usually, yeah, with Mings in the side as well, I think anything aerially, he's quite good.
Leadership.
And quite dominant with that. But set pieces. And I think also attacking-wise, just to flip it a bit, I think we could probably score a lot more goals. We've got a decent bit of height. With Onana, Mings, Torres, you know, we're not blessed with loads, but we've got a decent.
We haven't actually been as creative with set pieces.
I ran into him the other day. I'm going to tell him that you were questioning his set pieces, Chad. I'm going to tell him he may be inviting you into his set pieces.
Jesus, I would do.
No, he's actually a great guy, Austin McPhee. Like, really, really nice bloke, really, really funny bloke. But I actually think the defending of corners thing, stay with me here, I actually think it's not a bad thing, because we've conceded two in the last four games and they've both been from corners. But that can be ironed out. And teams generally are scoring more goals from set pieces now, I would say. Like, how many Arsenal score from set pieces? Like, set pieces are a big part of football at the moment. But what that tells me is that actually the rest of our defending's really, really strong. Because the last four games, no one else has scored a goal that wasn't from a set play. So I would actually look at it and say, it's not a bad problem to have, because they will iron it out. That run of conceding off set pieces won't continue.
They'll sort it out.
Yeah. So generally, our defending has been pretty strong.
Yeah, it's better than conceding with the first shot. Remember that?
Little phase
that we had. Yeah, so I mean, we have to have some sort of phase, don't we, being the villain? Yeah.
It's only early stages. We can still fix it. You've just been the last two Premier League home games. Just Fulham and conceding from a corner.
Yeah.
And Burnley, as long as we don't make it a habit.
Yeah.
Does it? I mean, me, I think, as well. I think it's more being more organisation. I think physical presence. Sort of staying with your man. I think. Then be strong.
What do you think of Pau Torres, Chad? Since Mings has been absent?
I think he's got better. I think last season I was sort of a little bit concerned with him. A bit of an liability sometimes at the back. But with Pau Torres there, I like his ability on the ball. Look at the way that he picks out a pass. Looks like long range as well.
Yeah, his passing's good, isn't it? I think, you know, that was one of the main reasons we got him. And last season got a bit found out, or teams were sort of cutting those channels out. But I felt like the last couple of games, he's been a bit quicker with the passing, if that makes sense. I feel like he's not
sharper.
Yeah, he had a bad injury as well, didn't he? You know, it can take a while, you know. I imagine it's pretty tough having to come back and then get back up to the pace of the Premier League and stuff. And, you know, he's not exactly blessed with the most pace and speed anyway. So, yeah, I think he came in at the right time.
I'm not a fan of him, to be honest with you. Because they've got Mings at one point where Mings was actually playing a few games. But I think Unai Emery as well. I think he's learned a lot, obviously, Unai Emery as well. And of course, like, he played with Villarreal, obviously, as well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, everyone always says he's Unai's favourite. Whenever players are interviewed, they say, like, who's the teacher's pet? And they also... Pau Torres. So Mings have done well to get in the team at the start of the season. But I think last season, maybe there was the odd game where Emery got picking them wrong. I think Palace in the semi-final of the FA Cup, I think that was a Mings game, and he picked Torres, and there was a phase where I kept thinking, oh, he's picked the wrong one there. But we're lucky, like with left back, we're lucky that we've got two different types of players who are both top quality players and who aid Villa in their own ways. Like Torres he actually looks like he's got more aggressive as a defender as well in the break. Like since he's been out of the team, he's come back and he's just seems to be that little bit more aggressive. And I actually think his defending's been pretty good as well. Not just his passing. So all around, fair play to him.
He's got like a good physical presence. He's sort of a lot more stronger, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I thought at times, sometimes he was weak. I mean, you look at the Crystal Palace game at Wembley. Times like that, I think he struggled.
Oh, he had a bad day that day, didn't he?
He did, yeah. But I mean, all players there, they go through phases.
Agreed.
So I've gone to my last point then. So I can ask you, Dan, then. So how do you think Aston Villa will manage with their fixtures after the international break? They've got some tough fixtures coming up.
I actually feel good. I feel good about that Tottenham game. I think they've shown in recent weeks that they can be got at when they have won. They've won narrowly. I think Thomas Frank's a great manager, and obviously, you know, he's pulled them miles away from where they were last season in the Premier League. I think he's a good appointment, but don't see any reason why we can't go there and win. They can still be got at defensively at Tottenham, and obviously we've had a decent-ish record there over the last few years, but bar last season. Europa League, Jacob said this to me earlier, the Villa are just the favourites, aren't they, for every Europa League game that they play. Yeah. So I don't know anything about Go Ahead Eagles. I've got to be honest, when we drew them, I didn't even know what country they were from.
We've got a good chance, I think.
Yeah, completely. But it's we've managed that Thursday to Sunday. We managed it well when we're in the Conference League. I'm hoping that we can do that again. And then Man City are starting to click, aren't they? They are starting to get into gear and get results, but they've lost the last two visits to Villa Park. And I do actually think at the start of the season, well, we all looked at the fixtures and thought, that's a relatively kind of first seven or eight games there. Maybe we can get some momentum. And it didn't really happen for various reasons. But we've always turned up against the big boys at Villa Park. So I don't see anything in October that massively worries me. I don't look at all those games and think, we're going to get beat at Tottenham and we're going to lose to Manchester City at home. Not at all. We haven't got a great record at Anfield for the first game in November.
I'm not looking forward to that one.
I don't know what state they're going to be. Obviously, they're not going to just keep losing. They've lost their last couple. That's not going to keep happening. They'll probably sort themselves out by then. But you know, all games are difficult. But all teams have ways that you can hurt them as well. And it's more to do with us and how we are at the moment. And we feel in a good place again now, which is something I didn't expect a few weeks ago. So when we're in a good place as a club and playing the way that we played yesterday, I don't ever really worry about anything. We might lose a game, or I know we're capable of going somewhere and dropping a stinker. We've done it countless times, but generally I don't worry about the games. I don't look at those fixtures and think, oops, zero points there. Maybe I would have done a few weeks ago, but I don't know.
Look at the Manchester City game. In the last few years, we had a good record against City at Villa Park.
Yeah, some great games.
Yeah. I mean, I was back last Christmas and that was the one that I managed to get to the game. And that was, I always say, one of the best live performances I've seen was Coutinho against Leeds with the 3-3. I thought individual performance, he was unreal. And then watching Morgan Rodgers against City last Christmas was just like, brilliant. Whoa. Okay, these are levels he can get to. That for me was like, he was up there. So yeah, I don't fear Man City. I think the nice thing is, and like Dan said, you know, we're very good at balancing the sort of Thursday to Sunday. And I think with our momentum, it's important. So if we do have a bit of a stinker in one of the games, which I hope we don't, we can sort of rectify it or try something in the Europa League. I'm not trying to say we're using Europa League as like a test, but you know, you look at those games. I don't know who Go Ahead Eagles are. Maccabi Tel Aviv. Yeah,
they're a Dutch team. I think Go Ahead Eagles. I think the Dutch team. I think
Feyenoord was probably. I mean, looking on the fixture list, was arguably the toughest fixture.
Yeah, it was. Like,
we came through that. You know. Fine, relatively fine. So I think now it's like, okay, well, we can look to maximise, get the points from there, and also use it to keep the momentum going. So, yeah, I don't fear anybody. Tough games, yes. The Liverpool one's the one, I think. I don't know what's going to happen with that one because we just don't ever
take it. Anfield's a fortress.
Yeah, we just struggle at those sort of places. But the rest of them, honestly, yeah. Be fine.
You know what? I'm looking forward to the Tottenham game, boy. Because Unai Emery and Thomas Frank. Tactical battle. Interesting tactical battle.
Frank's very good. And I was pleased for him. I like him. I like Brentford.
I admire him what he's doing. I really admire Thomas Frank.
He's a good manager. So I think, yeah, be a different sort of game. But like Dan said, you know, we have a decent success rate at Tottenham. So, you know. Okay. I expect us to put
it after those games as well. You'll sort of see the level where we're at after those games, because then you think you've got Christmas coming up then. So,
have we got another break after that? So, there's the November international, isn't there?
No, and any one more break, then it's only one more international break. So, then it's not the new year, obviously, isn't it? The next break.
Yeah, not one till March then.
Yeah, good.
And then next season, they're putting the October and November one into the same kind of break. So you end up with like 3 weeks off. That's going to be painful. So I find the international break hard.
Yeah, I struggle. I really do. Just being out
I don't like the international break.
No, I'm not a fan. I like the World Cup and the Euros, but not the break.
Yeah. Don't like how we get there, but love being there.
Yeah.
Because I don't like it. I like the way we were sort of doing well. During a good run with momentum, then the international break comes.
Yeah,
it's the opposite last time, wasn't it? Like I said earlier, I don't like it because I use football to get out of things. And I just base my life around football. So at the weekend, if my wife suggests something that I don't want to do, I don't really have an excuse if there's no football on. That's the bit I struggle with.
No, mate, I get it. Also, I don't know about you guys. I get a bit of anxiety about like players coming back injured.
Yeah, there is
I'm like constantly looking because you know we're all over the country, and I'm like, has Martinez, has Cash, has this. And I'm like, that also like annoys me a bit. But you know, it's one of them, isn't it?
No, I'm adjusting to Thursday, Sunday. Because Dan, how do you find the Sunday 2 o'clock kickoffs? Did you like the 2 o'clock kickoffs? Yeah.
I don't mind it. I'd rather it was Saturday 3 o'clock. Obviously, I think we all probably like going to the football Saturday 3 o'clock because it's what we all did growing up before like football completely changed. But it is what it is. It's a product of being in Europe and doing well. Like we never used to have Thursday Sunday to worry about, did we? And now it's something that's become an almost regular thing. Well, they're all on TV now, aren't they? So. That one might not necessarily have been on TV if it had been a Saturday game. So I guess there's a benefit with us being, most of our games being on a Sunday, that fans everywhere will get to watch our games because we'll be on TV simply every Sunday, whether you're a pick or whether you're just one of the extra games now. Every Sunday you're going to be on telly. So I guess it's a good thing for people watching Villa.
Do you got Sky Sports and Mix as well?
Yeah, everything's like, you can watch them all at the same time now, which I can't imagine ever wanting to do, but you can watch them all at the same time.
That's the great thing about being over in New York, boys, because I have Peacock, but the different streaming services. So I'm watching the Villa at like 9 a.m. in the morning, which don't get me wrong, it's been weird. Like the transition to getting used to the football, and then, you know, if you're in like a dive bar at whatever time in the morning and you come out and it's like bright light, you're like, well, this is confusing. But you exactly that though, you have the selection of all the games. That's the one thing over here, like there's just games everywhere.
Which do you go to the Legends Bar? Is that where I went there when I went to New York years and years, about 6-7 years ago. One of the best days/nights I've ever had in my life.
It was great. And then my mate came over. So we went to watch the Man United game back in May. Obviously, it was full of Chelsea fans. So that wasn't the greatest. But go there regularly. Meet up with some of the New York Lions out there. Yeah,
it's great there.
It's a good vibe, man. But
New York, it's a nice place. Yeah,
well, boys, if you ever decide... Hit me up, man. You're always welcome to come and chill. My wife and my baby will get me out of the house or the apartment. But if you want to stay and stuff, you can use the place.
I'd love to go to New York again. Let me tell you,
mate. You're expecting, aren't you? Well, you're not, but you're missing.
January. Yeah, thank you.
You're gonna say try and get out before, but I don't know how far gone. But if you need tips, mate, I've got a 1-year-old now. And
have you?
We can chat after, but yeah, it's
I'm more worried about being the oldest dad in the playground currently. That's probably the thing that worries me the most. I think by the time my kid goes to school, I'll be 45, and I imagine all the other parents are a lot younger than me. So I'll be the oldest dad in the playground.
Well, mate, you don't look 45. Trust me, it's all about.
I'm glad I don't look 45 now, because I'm not 45 now. But yeah,
but when he's at school, right? When you
finish, I'll be 30 next year.
Bloody hell.
30. Jeez. I remember that. That feels a long time ago.
Yeah. Well,
before I finish, I'm going to make an exciting announcement to Mike. But on Friday afternoon at 1:30 p.m, I'll be interviewing sports journalist Gillian Bannergay.
Oh,
nice.
I'll be doing an interview about his new book called The Rise of the Villains. So make sure that you tune into that one. It's going to be a very good, interesting insight into the new book and Unai Emery. And you see, which I've been planning for quite a while. Also, I'm hoping him to promote his event as well at the Witten Arms. Well, thank you both. I really enjoyed chatting to both of you.
I enjoyed it too, mate. Thank you for having me on.
Likewise, thank you, and great meeting you, Dan. And
you, mate.
As always, Shadon, well done on getting that interview, chat. That's great,
mate. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for watching. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to make sure to subscribe. Make sure to smash the like button. Make sure to give it a share on your socials. And if you're listening by audio, make sure to leave a good review. That always helps. Also, let me know your thoughts in the comment section. Thank you so much, the guests, for your time today.
Thank you, mate.
I'm going to wrap up this episode with Villa forever, as always, and up the Villa.